This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 and bizradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 2nd of October. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, the lovely Jill Serkin. In the first part of the show, we heard from Fran Borman, our lovely guest, talking about her new business, Goal 17. We've got two more fabulous guests to talk to in the second part of the show. We've got some more emails and tweets to read out, so we will crack on. What you got?
Well, you've given me very long emails, I notice. So the Romney, they're all very interesting, but they're very long. The Romney Resource Centre has a vacancy for Head of Strategy and Development. It's a leading charitable community organisation which is based in the heart of Romney Marsh in delicious Kent here in the UK. They have a reputation for delivering high quality training with a wealth of experience in supporting individuals and the wider community. And their vision is to provide support and activities that encompass all age groups, abilities, interests and the needs of local people. And the approved candidate will report directly to the board. So I'm going to give you who to contact here. You can email directly to find out more. Terry Botty, our very own, TerryBotty, 744@gmail.com.
You can follow him on the Twitter. His Twitter handle's TDBotty.
TDBotty.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is sweet. And you can also register your interest by looking on romney-resource.co.uk with a little slash about a little hyphen us, another slash, vacancies. So you can go on there and have a look. And they want you to achieve the RRC, Romney Resource Centre, objectives as set out by the board with a prime focus on becoming the organisation to lead and manage any proposed skills and business hub in New Romney. So there's a load of scope there. So go on and look at that. And see if you can be the next head of strategy and development in Romney Marsh.
Cool.
Shall I read another one?
You can. I'm just catching up with some tweets I missed, because I missed one from Barry, from me now.
Oh, God, what's he said?
From the start of the show.
Is he moaning about me again?
No, he said when we were talking about you mentioning Slopoff, and he says, you've got two hours almost to go yet, Paul. Yeah, she ain't going to shut up, and that's true. Yeah.
He's so rude. Wait till I see him. High-tech investment for Kent Production Company. So a Kent-based video production company has been awarded a capital grant to support an investment of £15,000, enabling the agency to deliver cinematic quality films using the latest technology. The grant has enabled Digitom to invest in the latest high-tech equipment to deliver 4K raw filming and editing. Having taken delivery of the new equipment over the summer, the company has recently delivered its first 4K production, a new visitor centre film for Britain's oldest brewer, Shepherd Neame, in Faversham. Mm. So well done, guys. That was really, really good to get that investment.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm just catching up on a few tweets. As I alluded to earlier, we're being listened to by the lovely Linda Garcia of Aluxi Consulting. Do follow Linda. She's a maven on productivity and such things.
And also on your timekeeping.
Yeah.
Because you were 4 minutes late.
Well, she's a productivity consultant. That's why she was giving me jip about being 4 minutes late. Yeah.
Good job she didn't listen to Scoff and Quaff show.
Yeah, that was a right disaster,
was
wasn't it?
You got a bit uppity with me, didn't you?
I got annoyed, yeah.
Fact is, you got annoyed in front of my esteemed guests.
I know.
So I'd rather you'd have left it till they'd gone, actually. But no.
Yes, I know you would, but then you wouldn't have had a radio show to show them, would you?
Marsh networking over coffee, Paul Andrews.
I think I won that one.
It's 1 year old. No, you didn't. I just bit my lip.
Ah, right, okay.
Marsh networking over coffee is 1 year old in October. And so the next Marsh networking over coffee will mark the first birthday of the Marsh Network. And they say, thank you for making this new venture a success. They have a regular attendance of 20 peeps or more. Mm-hmm. The birthday meeting is at 10 a.m. on the 10th of October at the Cinque Port Arms near Romney. New Romney, sorry. Please book at, there's a long thing, but you can go on to, where can we book?
If you go to Kent Business Radio website and go to the blogs, and it's Marsh. It's kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Marsh will take you to the page.
That sounds better. And as well as the usual professional relaxed business networking and an update from the group, they'll have a pop-up speaker. Adrian James is going to come out of the cake. Adrian James is from the Kent Police on fraud and cybercrime. Oh, as you know, I love a man in uniform.
I might
go to this.
Yeah.
When is it? It's the 10th of October. I do love a man that pops out the cake in the uniform. So Kent Police on fraud and cybercrime, a charity auction for a panto experience.
Oh, no, it's not.
I know him so well. Provided by Jackie Offen of JJ Symptoms.
Symptoms. JJ Symptoms.
she's now a doctor.
Yeah, JJ Systems.
Proceeds, you know what I meant.
Yeah.
Proceeds go to CARM, C-A-R-M, the local charity who support older people, Paul, who live in isolation.
Don't start.
On Romney Marsh. And there will be cake baked by Lisa Parkinson, who's a cake artist, and she owns Baking by the Sea. She should come on Scoff and Quaff.
Mm.
And they say, please let's make the birthday meeting a record. 34 attended when we launched last October, and we now have 160 authorised members of the group Facebook page. Stop pointing at me. Come along and bring a new contact. Let's see if we can beat 34 and have some fun. Terry Botfield, business mentor and coach, Botfield Associates.
Fantastic. Talking about cakes, you've got the fabulously, stonkingly, beautifully gorgeous Sally Laker yeah. coming on your show, haven't
She's
you?
She's on the Christmas
show. Sally for Cakes, yeah.
Yeah, well, she made my wedding cakes, of course. And
not only yours, she made Greg Wallace's wedding cake
well.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, I'm a bit more famous than Greg Wallace.
Obviously, yeah, obviously.
And I'm not a grocer, you know.
So. Obviously. But you are a bit grosser.
I can get gross.
Yeah.
But no, she makes amazing cakes. Because my one weakness is her lemon drizzle cake.
Lemon drizzle cake.
Ooh. Is my one weakness.
She made my big birthday cake as well.
Yeah, she did. Which you've still got it, haven't you?
I've still got parts of it.
Yeah, there were the models. She made a model.
She made a model of the whole studio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it was his, you know, the head with the headphones in it and the glasses and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I've still got, well, she made Che, his 21st. My son is now 22.
Yeah, right? So it was my 21st as well.
Yeah. And she made Che's cake, and he was training as a lifeguard at the time for uni, you know, to keeping in the money while he was at uni. And I've still got his lifeguard figure lying in my fridge. Just, and whenever a Shay comes to the fridge, I say, oh my God, Mum, for God's sake, it's like, you know, a year old. I was just lying, this model of them made out of sugar.
It's like keeping your toenail cuttings, really, isn't it?
Isn't that a first sign of a serial killer?
Yeah, 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 exactly. Exactly.
Or, Fran, the umbilical cord.
Oh.
I've got one in a little jar.
There are men in the room here.
Yeah.
There are men in the room here.
I never ate the placenta, did you?
No.
She always lowers the tone.
I have got friends that still have theirs in the placenta. Their placenta in the freezer.
Really? What, to eat?
They use them for making homeopathic remedies.
Really?
Yeah, apparently it's supposed to be a really good thing, but when your child is ill, if you can take in a little bit of
their
placenta. Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's very interesting.
You know what my joke about is? A nice Chianti.
I'm just amazed that, you know, the policemen that come out of cakes, they're generally not policeman. You do know that.
She doesn't care.
She doesn't really care, Chris, to be quite frank. She really doesn't care.
I had a very big birthday recently, not as big as Paul's, but quite big, and I didn't get a dressed-up policeman popping out of a cage.
Well, I didn't get one either.
No, but would you like a dressed-up policeman?
Not particularly.
Sounds like a new party.
Yeah.
It's nearly Christmas.
I think Fran and I could have our own show talking about placentas and things. I'm quite into that, really. Placentas and umbilical cords and things. Yeah, I had mine by the bed, the umbilical cord, for quite a while. He's 22 now.
He grew up.
It's amazing what you can grow in a yogurt pot.
But my oldest was—he's 32. That's his business there, Ibiza Fitness Foods. But he was a cesarean baby. Now apparently the other two are natural.
He's Italian, is he?
If you're if you're a cesarean baby, you don't go through the vagina.
Do you know what?
Wall.
Anyway,
yeah.
Moving
on. Let's get back to football.
You don't get the good bacteria.
So United then, Chris. What did you think about that at the weekend?
Oh, just don't even talk.
No, it's even worse, isn't it?
to West Ham as well.
To West Ham,
our two founding clubs.
Yeah, but you got a scarf from one.
Come on. We'll probably run the first programme at West Ham, so it's split loyalties here.
No, just ring up Edward, but he won't want that.
And David Beckham, you've got to meet David Beckham somehow.
Well, you know, I've got a feeling if this goes well in the UK, he's going to want it for his little LA stadium.
He will.
So.
Especially now he's had a hair transplant.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
It's time to meet.
We'll afford to meet him now, maybe. Now he's got a bit more hair. So.
Enough of this frivolity. I'd like to talk to our next two guests, frank, because anything, I'd like to do anything other than listen to any more than you.
I'd like to keep my lunch down.
It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome Daryl and Chris of My Careers Options.
We've made Chris choke.
I know. He's never going to
even go there.
He's never going to be the same after this. I tell you, of My Careers Options. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show.
It's a pleasure.
And I know, Daryl, in another guise, you were on the show years ago, weren't you? Back in the Dimchurch days. So it's been a long time since we last saw you in a bunker.
Dimchurch studio.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well,
that's ages ago.
I know.
Yeah.
But I remembered you.
Sweet. We haven't changed.
No, not at all.
I think we were worse then, actually.
She was actually older then.
We used to have alpacas walking through the studio, and I think you got mounted by a porcupine once.
Fred, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, he did.
There you go.
So did you say packers or alpacas?
Alpacas.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a story there, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, welcome to the show, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you kick us off by telling us a little bit about each of you, and then we'll talk about the business and what it is you're doing, because I'm loving what you're doing, and it's something that we've been really poor at in this country, in my humble opinion, forever. And you're starting to address something that has needed a lot of addressing, so I'm really keen to talk to you about that. But start off by telling us who you are and what you do and what brought you to this stage.
I'm Chris. Hello. Thanks for having us on.
It was a pleasure.
I worked in a different business for an awfully long time.
And give us a clue.
I worked in the film business, hence the two-tone shoes and the funny hair, for an awfully long time. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, I met some people who were interested in doing something in, it was a visual idea, in terms of helping people back into employment, NEETs at the time.
Yeah.
And about that time, I met Daryl, and we were talking about how we could do it. And we realised that actually, if you get to NEETs, who are sort of 18 to 24, educational training, you've kind of gone past when you can do the most damage.
Yeah.
You want to help earlier on.
Yeah.
So if you can help at school,
yep,
then you've got a really, really good chance of making a difference. So we sort of got together and thought that would be something we'd like to do. But the only reason why I'm in the business is I'm the handsome one.
Right, obviously, yeah.
Daryl's the one who does all the work, and I'm the handsome one.
Yeah, absolutely. You're the front.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that make it look acceptable. No, absolutely. I get that.
You can see that.
Yeah. So, Daryl, what brought you to...
obviously, when I come and saw you last, I was setting up a marketing company, going out on my own, as Fran was saying, obviously small businesses, taking on the burden of learning everything. So it was quite a learning curve for me. Obviously, I was working, or I knew Chris anyway, we've been good friends for many years now. And it was kind of February before last, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we were sitting in my back garden, actually. We were having this conversation.
You must have had blankets on and a brazier in February.
No. It wasn't. It was actually a nice day. And we were out in the garden, we were chatting, and basically we were talking about how frustrating it is looking at what careers advice or guidance is there for kids.
Yeah.
My son's 24, and so I've been through that whole process of at school and you know, him not really having any ideas of what he's going to do and stuff like that. So, and sort of working with him up to leaving school, going on, he went and did 2 years as TV and film production. That was going to be his world. So 2 years at college doing that, pretty much because he fancied the teacher when he went for the open day, I'm pretty sure.
But did Chris influence him?
No, not at all, not at all.
It's just on that, as I think most people know, and Daryl's involved in this as well, we do a program called 30-30, yeah, which we take businesses brilliant into schools and talk to kids about, students about the world of work. And there's some stuff here that, you know, always kind of gets me that... we ask kids what they want to do. Why the hell would they know?
Why would they know?
Right. And when you ask them a question, they feel like they need to answer it because they're at school and that's what schools make you do. So they'll come out with the one thing that they know. I want to be a professional footballer, or I want to be a hairdresser. You know, they'll come out with, or they'll go, I want to be on the telly. And of course, that ain't going to happen for 99.9999999% of people.
I think what you've done, though, is you sort of hit the nail on the head. What it is people know that there are lots of jobs, but they don't know all the jobs.
Yeah.
And what they definitely don't know is what they could be good at.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they don't actually know what the job is.
Yeah.
So what we've tried to do is create something where they get a lot of options for jobs. Our hope is that if you get 10 options for jobs, 5 of them are things you've never thought that you could do, and 5 of them are things you've never heard of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we did it when we were creating the list of jobs that we've got. It's about 850 jobs.
Chris came out as a pole dancer.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you saying I wouldn't be a good pole dancer?
No, I've seen it.
I don't shake
these
easily.
These two need their own comedy show.
Yeah, they do.
But what we kind of found was that... when we were looking at these careers, and everyone will say that there is, I mean, my business, the film business, there are 1,000 jobs on a film set.
Exactly.
That's not the point.
Gaffer.
Getting a gaffer, exactly. That's not the point. Was that just a word you just popped up?
It's what she's using to keep her stockings up.
I really can't say.
I always see at the end, I think, what's a gaffer? You know?
It's an electrician, but it doesn't matter.
Really?
Yeah. we could go. No, we won't. So what we wanted to do was, we were looking through all these job lists and going, I don't know what that is. Mm. Let's go investigate. Mm. And that's exactly what you want kids to do.
Yeah.
But of course, there's a big disconnect in schools. Schools, unfortunately, have problems with their budgets. I understand that. And parents have problems with time.
Mm.
And what you need is, you need parents to engage with kids and you need schools to engage with parents. It's a triangle. And the problem is, no one seems to be doing that.
Yeah.
So that's how we sort of
decided. Kind of blown my mind. So obviously from starting my own business, it gave me the flexibility to be able to obviously volunteer. So working with Young Enterprise, being a business advisor to students, doing Skills 30-30, I think it's brilliant. It's an excellent program that we have run in. But you can realise that the kids don't have a clue. And why should they?
No, they shouldn't. There's no reason why they shouldn't.
One of the students I met at one of the last events we did on Skills 30-30, she was really concerned that she didn't know. Everyone kept asking her what she wanted to be, and she didn't know. And I said, well, I'm approaching 50, and I've just changed my career, so don't worry about it.
More than ever, it doesn't matter any longer. It doesn't matter what you want to do, because by the time you come to do it, you can't do it anyway.
You're
because
right.
It's changed.
Yeah.
You know, right. we need to get away from this. This is just one of my pet things of defining ourselves by silos of careers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things I don't do it very often now because I don't have the time, but I used to teach a program about this, which was an in-depth program of teaching this, and where I teach people to understand their core transferable skills.
Absolutely.
Are you good with people? Are you good with things? Are you good with data? Because that is what will inform you in the type of work you do. And it doesn't actually matter what job you do. The task is to make the job that you do have more of the things that you enjoy doing and less of the things that you don't, and then you'll be happy.
I think that's a really, really important point, actually, because what happens is one of the things that our system does, which is quite different from a lot of other systems, probably a lot of people out there are familiar with psychometrics, which is an important psychological science, but it's only as good as the things that you put in. So if people aren't engaged or they don't want to do it, you're, you know, rubbish in, rubbish out. Or they fib, exactly.
Yeah.
So what we've tried to do is create a system where you're not just looking at one thing. You're not looking at someone's personality. You're not looking at someone's skills. You're not looking at their abilities. You're looking at everything. Mm. It's a holistic person, which means that, and this is something that we've gleaned from talking to various employers, a lot of employers would go, well, I'd actually rather have a 17-year-old that would love to do this job, and then I can train them up.
Yep.
Than have a graduate who's going to be there for 2 years before he moves on for a CV.
Yeah.
And I think it's very, very important that people understand that they can do, not that they can't do.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really important. That sounds a little bit hippie.
No, no, but you're absolutely right. And it's a massive thing at the moment because we have, currently, we have 830,000 unfilled jobs in the UK. So there's not a shortage of jobs. Yeah, you can do whatever you want to do. There's a job out there for you, for anyone. It's just how we go around getting you into that job.
Well, just look at the hospitality business. Absolutely. They cannot find chefs. They cannot find anybody in hospitality.
I think the scary thing is, obviously, in certain situations, if you've got somebody that doesn't know what they want to do or what they want to be, being pushed down a path they don't necessarily, they're not sure about, it's not a good thing. So what we wanted to do is come up with something similar to yourself, looking at something where we could do something that was going to help, if you like, as well.
Yeah.
So being a parent, there was a sort of an amount of money, you think, you know, every school trip costs an X amount of money. We wanted to come up with a product that wasn't an upsell to something or a starting point where you had an upsell to something else. Yeah, it just did what it said on the packet.
Yeah.
We didn't want to sign them into some sort of contract where they follow them for the next 5 years. It's trigger points. Kids have got, you know, short concentration around a certain area. So picking options, leaving school, staying on, apprenticeships, they're all triggers when they start panicking and go, right, what can I do? What should I think about? So what we wanted to do was come up with something that was going to be relevant and affordable at that time for mum and dad to do. But the idea being that mum and dad were the ones buying it. Nobody talks to parents. We've done a lot of research. There's about 15.6%-ish of parents don't care.
Yeah, actually put that down.
They literally don't care. They wouldn't spend a penny on helping their kids' career in the future.
Yeah.
And it was almost 70% of parents said that if the schools showed them something that would be useful, they would be engaged with it. Mm. But they kind of sit on the outside thinking, well, that's kind of the school's job.
Mm. Yeah.
And actually, the schools say they'd like to talk to the parents. The parents say they'd like to be more involved. And the kids are in the middle going, I have no idea.
Yeah.
So actually, it's trying to link the three.
Yeah.
And adding to that is businesses as well. A lot of businesses will moan about the youth of today, but don't actually do anything to engage and encourage and show them. Yeah,
definitely. So the idea is it is as simple as, you know, we've not made it overcomplicated. It takes about 45 minutes. It's an assessment that looks at their spatial reasoning.
And this is all done online.
It's all online, they can do it on their mobile phone. On any device. And they can do it in 5 minute spits and spots or wherever, however they want to do it. It's not a problem. And at the end of it, they get this result. And the result is basically 10 careers that they would be good at based on all their answers.
Right.
So if you're an A star student or an F student, it makes no difference. It'll always identify the 10 things that you would be good at.
Yeah.
So nobody is better than anybody else.
Yeah.
You're just better at different things.
Yeah.
So it's empowering students to have, you know, have sort of a good outlook on opportunities.
I think also one of the things that we've taken out of the system, which I think is really, really important, I know this is a big Daryl thing. It wasn't a big me thing when I started, but it's being a bit more scientific. But it's a big Daryl thing, is that if you've got very, very good personality skills, which are innate in you, if you're very agreeable, if you can get on with people, if you can, if you're able to take pressured situations and so on, the skills involved in a high level job could be yours.
Mm.
The fact that you're at school and you're not very good at maths should not bar you from being able to do something in a mathematical world. All you need is to see an end game.
Yeah.
I mean, I was never any good at maths, but it's seeing that end game. I mean, I wanted to be a filmmaker from 7 years old, so it's kind of a weird thing. But it's seeing something and going, you know what? I could actually be a barrister.
Mm.
Whereas everyone else is telling you, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this. Just knuckle down and you can do it.
It's one of... As someone that didn't go to school, which is the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because I never
agree totally.
Yeah, I never got brainwashed by the education establishment. Our education system doesn't match the real world in any way, shape, or form. It teaches you things in silos. I used to do this thing that said, if you take someone like Usain Bolt, one of the world's greatest sprinters, in a traditional educational setting, they would call him in and go, okay, so you're pretty fast at running, but your cross country's crap.
Yeah.
So we're going to put you in remedial cross country lessons. And then you would end up with a poor sprinter and a poor cross country runner. Because we don't focus on people's abilities. We focus on trying to force them into learning something.
Yeah.
And maths is important. Yeah. And English is important. But if you line it as a dry subject, most people, especially boys, go, why do I need to know that?
I think one of the big issues, and it's something that maybe we're sort of trying to get parents to see a little bit more, is I don't think it's necessarily their fault at the moment. I think it's the fault of everything around them, is we seem to have become a system that's like an academic factory.
Yeah.
The object of school is to go to sixth form. The object of sixth form is to go to university. The object of university is to get a job. And when I was younger, that wasn't the case.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people left school early. A lot of people went to go into the business or whatever. And then you come back to school later. And a lot of schools just look at you kind of weird when you say, well, what about if this person could go and do a job? And they're like, well, they've got to go and do this and they've got to go and do that. Mm. Don't get me wrong. You know, they have to learn English. They have to learn basic maths. They have to learn these things. But I think if you say to somebody, by learning these things, you can do this.
Mm.
Because you'd be good at it. But more importantly, you'd enjoy it.
You'd enjoy it, which is the big...
Because like I think that's the huge thing. If you don't enjoy it,
why are you going to be doing it for the next...
Yeah, exactly. I was at school with a lad called Steve Akers, and Steve was as bad as me at maths, and we were bad. Really, really bad. Like, really, really bad. Like, I don't even care. I really don't care. Steve owns a chain of bookmaker shops.
He got good at maths,
but he got good at maths because he liked horses.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. If you don't know what the end goal, or not the end goal, is something but to aim
goal.
For.
A goal.
You need to aim. And if you're floundering around when you're picking your options, or a good example, we had a teacher I work with, and her son was about to pick options, and he was leaning towards the ones that were more geared around what his friends were doing. And actually, he did the assessment, and what the assessment did was he highlighted some areas that they all knew he was good at, but he didn't believe in it himself so much.
Mm.
And now it's made him literally aim down. You know, I think he came out as a zoologist, so he's like really passionate about, wow, you know, this is a really good opportunity for me. He may never be a zoologist, but if for the next 5, 6, 10 years he aims in that direction, he's going to find something that's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what we've wanted to do is make this affordable for everybody. So we've got a price on them. It's £47 if a parent wants to buy it for their kid. Absolutely not a problem at all. But what we've also done is we've come up with a model for schools.
Mm.
So schools are really struggling with budgets. They cut back all the time. The Gatsby benchmarking is expecting them to hit higher levels with regards to careers, engagement, and the whatever they're delivering. So what we've done is come up with a way in which schools always are going to approach parents for money for whatever it happens to be. But we set them up with a discount code, which means the parents can buy the assessment for £18.
Wow.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But what we're also going to do is for every student that completes it, we're looking at giving £5 back to the school for every student so they can reinvest in another employability program, you know, employment engagement.
Young Enterprise.
Yeah. So we're working with some of the programs in Young Enterprise.
Fantastic.
So to help fund some of the schools that can't afford to put those programs in the school.
So it's interesting. You kind of got the same approach as Fran, really, isn't it? Where you've got a social business that's using business principles to make things work. I love it. You've got to be able to think.
You've got to be able to look at a school and go, everything they're doing at the moment is geared around the fact that they don't have enough money.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. And you know, my sister's a teacher and a really, really good one. Mm. And I think that when you're – and there's nothing – school's great, you know, and education's fantastic, and in fact, it's the only way to empower yourself as you move forward. But I think if you can say to a school, this is not going to cost you anything, the parents have to engage because they're paying for it, and they get a report back.
They get a copy.
It's a conversation starter. But the school also gets some money back that means that they can go back to their school and they can say, we can run a careers event, which we couldn't afford. Nothing's coming out of a school coffer. So the very first barrier when you hit any kind of admin at the moment in any kind of public sector is we don't have any money. Well, if we say, well, we'll give you money, it incentivizes them. And you're not necessarily incentivizing them to buy your product, although we are. You're incentivizing them to do a better job.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not because they don't want to do it.
It's because they can't.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I think that's the whole thing. It's like you say, you've got to find innovative ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's no point in ploughing on the same furrow. It's not working.
We've been doing that for ages.
Absolutely.
You know, we've been doing it for ages. We are lucky. We have one of the lowest youth employments in Europe, but it's still 10%. There's still 400,000 unemployed 16 to 24-year-olds. And one of the things I like, and if it was me, I'd get a bit aggressive about this with parents. I'd go, Do you want your kids living with you until they're 42, or do you want them to find a job? Your choice. I'm 18 quid.
Yeah. You've just read his mind.
Mark's in
back. He's trying, he's trying to get rid of his kid right now. Yeah. So, yeah.
Are you one of the 15% that don't care?
The evil 15.
It's interesting you said about skills 30-30, because one thing that really interested me when I did that was that how many of the young people just choose to do the career that their parents
don't know anything else.
And we were talking, I was talking
you
to
see that in accountants and dentists.
Well, it's a young boy that I was talking to, and he said he really likes sport. So he said, I said, so what do you want? So he goes, I'm gonna be a PE teacher. So I said, well, what do your parents do? They're teachers. It's like, okay. I said, do you know there's other careers in sports? And he looked at me as if to say, you know, what else? And we started going through different options, and just what you're suggesting, I think it's absolutely amazing.
It is, but
because
I think,
it's, even in those choices that they wouldn't be exposed to
otherwise.
Exactly.
And it's you're right. You speak to one of the students and they'll say, I really like maths, blah, blah, blah. I need to work in an accountancy firm. And I'm like, why do you need to work in an actual accountancy firm? Mm. Well, because that's where accountants work. And I'm like, newsflash, Nike have got an accounts department. Or, you know, there's a marketing department in whoever. You don't have to go and work in a marketing agency if you want to work in marketing. You don't. But they don't have, it's very blinkered.
There's some chairmen of some of the biggest companies in London are accountants.
Exactly. So it's just giving them food for thought.
It's the whole experience thing that's lacking. You know, they haven't had any experience. So Fran's absolutely right. Their only experience in the world of work is what their parents do, or if they've got much older siblings or friends that do things. That's the only thing they ever hear about. As the outcome of a 30-30 once, the school I did it in went to me, we love what you did, Paul, but it's the parents that are the problem. Can you talk to the parents? So I did a workshop for parents, which was fascinating because I wound up so many people because they just wouldn't think about it. Somebody said, well, what am I going to do? I said, I could work for McDonald's. And they went, that's outrageous. And I went, but you're just thinking about flipping burgers. Whereas I know people that work in supply chain logistics, and unless they worked at McDonald's, they're not taken professionally seriously because McDonald's have the world's greatest supply chain logistic operation. You know, McDonald's operate IT. There's accountants. There's lawyers work for McDonald's, not just people that flip burgers. Yeah. And I was being facetious, but I'm trying to get you to open up your thinking. That, you know, that things happen in businesses. Don't take everything at face value.
I think that also you find that some – sorry.
No, go on.
But you also find some parents feel that they have to try and push their kids in a direction. And actually, do you know what? Every single person is different. And I think as parents, it's our responsibility to make sure that we – support our kids in whatever it is they want to go and do rather than what we want to do or what we would like to have done, if you like.
Well, because we think about also my youngest wanted to be a detective and he did criminology at uni and he hasn't gone into the forces, but I was terrified that he was going to go out and get stabbed on the beat. That's all I could think of, you know. And, you know, he still wants to be a detective and he probably will be one day.
It's an interesting thing, though, because that what comes into it then is what the actual job entails.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if he'd become an detective, he could have gone into intelligence and he would never go anywhere near a beat. Yeah. He'd be spending all his time coordinating people.
He'd get poisoned instead of stabbed.
He's not Russian, is he?
Yeah. Has that made you feel better?
Okay. Or an umbrella.
But that is aging. I'm sorry. The Gyorky Markov umbrella incident.
I'll tell you what was aging. I was listening to you earlier on. When I left school, I left about 14 and a half, and I was told that the career I should do, the only career that was ever, was to be a GPO telephonist.
Yeah.
That was the job. You don't even know what GPO is.
I'm sorry.
in those days, wasn't it? GPO, you know, in the old films where
Doll's Eyes.
Putting you through that. That was like the career for anyone that went to my school, you know, comprehensive.
My dad wanted me to be a dustman because he thought that's all I could cope with.
Well, your friend.
And you don't even put the rubber on
chicken sex. Chicken sex is his favourite. Yeah. a friend of ours
it's
said that his.
I tell you what.
Female.
Do you know what? 50 grand a year for a chicken.
Yeah,
50 grand a year for a chicken sexer.
I know, but it's not the sort of thing at school you think, that's what I want
to
do.
That's what I do, But wouldn't it be great if somebody said that in one of the programmes, want to be a chicken sexer?
I found one yesterday.
Get sent to a clinical psychologist, I think.
I'm talking to a lot of students next week about this at one of the Lee Academy Trust schools. And I was talking to you yesterday, when a hippotherapist.
What is
hippo
that?
A hippo therapist.
Unusual job.
Talking to hippos.
That's
no,
what I
it's
thought.
No, it's not. It's somebody. It's qualified physio for horses in water.
Oh, of
right. Okay.
It's bonkers. Now, who would ever know? But no. The idea is, if you can come up with some ideas to start thinking about stuff, everyone can use Google.
And I guess this is the thing. It's actually probably a lot of the jobs these kids are doing haven't even been invented.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely
so
right.
So just by
absolutely
expanding right their minds about what's out there at the moment and getting them to think, actually, because a lot of the time, whilst when these young people finish school, there are going to be jobs that literally don't exist today.
Yeah.
So just getting them to think differently.
My God.
And it's not a small amount. It's a large percentage of jobs.
My godson's 11, yeah, and he's just started at Wilmington Academy. So I picked him up from school yesterday. He came back to the office, and that we were chatting. He's like, tell me what you do. What is all this? What do you do? So I was explaining. He's going, oh, right, that sounds interesting. And I was talking, I was saying, but the thing is, don't be worried. He wants to be a scientist. He wants to save the world, which is awesome. He wants to work in medicine so he can find things to help people.
The next Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, but there were certain things he didn't want to do in case he blew anything up.
But he's done like blood.
His backup is to work in a bowling alley because they get free lunch.
Hey. I like it. I like it.
I like the way he rolls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a businessman.
He is. He's all over it. But when I was talking to him, I was saying the thing is, like, anything you go and leave school to do now, it's going to be so different in 20 years' time. So when I left school, Christ, we didn't have an email. Mm-hmm. I said social media hadn't even been invented. We hadn't used it. We didn't have a clue. And I run a business that is based around that now. So don't worry about it. Just find something you like doing. Mm. Do it until you stop like doing it. And then
and
just
do something else. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. And be developing yourself.
Yeah.
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 And your own
just continually
you've got
learn
the skills.
Yeah.
You've got the skills. You've learned them. You've just spent whatever amount of time learning them.
It's really refreshing to talk to you about this because it's one of my things that have driven me mad for so long, that people have got totally the wrong view of how we construct careers. You also, one of the things that I'm not entirely comfortable with is people that say do something you love. In my experience, what tends to happen for most people, not all of them, but for most people, what happens is we find something that we do that we actually become quite good at and we fall in love with it.
Absolutely.
Because we're good at it. And just talking about earning, you know, parents push people towards, you know, being a doctor or a vet or an accountant or whatever. And they do that because they've got this view that that's a really healthy income generator and you're going to be reasonably well off. Yeah. But you can earn money doing absolutely anything. And
think of the bankers that have given up their jobs to be dog walkers that come out and walk dogs for people while they're out at work.
My careers advisor suggested I got a job. Oh, everyone, my parents and everyone, I got an interview at NatWest Bank when I started 2 days after my 16th birthday.
Yeah.
And he was like, get a job in a bank. Everyone will always need money. You'll never be unemployed. That was the theory. Yeah. What a load of rubbish. Mm. Now, when you think about it.
I met this guy a couple of times. Have you heard of a chap called Nassim Nicholas Taleb? He wrote a book called The Black Swan and a book called Anti-Fragile. And Nick is probably, he's got a brain like a planet. He's got like 4 PhDs in different things and he speaks like 57 languages and stuff like that. He's Lebanese-American. And he used to work, I was working on Wall Street and he was working in a French bank next door and I met him a couple of times. But he wrote this book and I was just rereading Anti-Fragile and he's a probability risk analyst. Yeah. And what he says is you can't manage risk. You just can't manage it. You know, it's just stupid. And he made a really interesting point. He said, I want you to think about this. People that have a job working for somebody else on a reasonable salary think they have a risk-free job, and self-employed people live from day to day on what they can earn. But in terms of risk probability, the person with the job is in a higher risk situation because one thing happens and you've lost everything.
Mm.
Yeah, bank
There's
goes
no
bust.
In your control.
Yeah, you've been made redundant. You're sacked. You know, Christmas party. You've photographed your bum. You're out. Yeah. You're dead. So you were earning 70,000 a year, nothing. Whereas a self-employed person, you lose a customer, something goes wrong, okay, you lose a bit of income, but you can
generate go out and get another customer.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon.
In fact, I just lost one of my biggest customers, and it spurred me on to you know, and I've now got three.
Yeah,
I think because I've been coasting.
And the difference with being self-employed is, and this is one thing I talk a lot actually in my forum about, is there's some fundamental skills such as selling, people management, relationship building that you have to learn when you're self-employed.
Yeah, yeah.
And those skills are completely transferable.
Absolutely.
If I look at my portfolio of businesses, people go, "What relates utilities to travel to football?"
Yeah.
And it's just the people skills.
Yeah.
So when we can get young people engaging in those skills, and then they adapt those to whether that's a job or being self-employed, that's I think where the
Today,
it always comes down to people, right?
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think what the difficulty is that there is a certain there's a certain path. And that path tends to be for people who can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who are not high achievers. They need to know that there are a lot of options out there. There are a lot of good things they can do. And I think one of the things that you're talking about, there are lots and lots and lots and lots of transferable skills. But we're not all going to be entrepreneurs.
No, absolutely.
We're not all going to be filmmakers. We're not all going to whatever. But if someone can look at something and go, "I'm not the kind of person that puts myself out there, entrepreneur has to be."
Yeah.
I'm not the kind of person that will go and get in someone's face and go, "Entrepreneur has to be." But if they can look at a load of jobs that we've done, they can have a constructive careers conversation about something that they would like to do, about something that they could do. I think it's important.
Interesting, Chris. I've got a tweet from Barry Thompson who says, "A very good discussion. I was proud to be part of the 30-30 program that was just run. And one of the first questions I asked the students was, what do you like to do now?
Yeah,
rather than what
good
job
point.
Do you like to do?
Good point.
A good one.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Something they can answer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then Neville Gaunt, who I know Neville really well. Neville's doing a lot of work in Pakistan at the moment, and he does a lot of work on MindFit and things like that. And Neville said, "Great discussion. Do you think education has lost its purpose, or do you think it never had one in the first place?" I think he aimed that at me because he knows what my thinking is on that.
I mean, if you go all the way. Okay, I took a politics degree, so you could go all the way back to sort of 1848 and the 1878 Education Act, the object of which was to get people being able to read and write because you needed a skilled workforce because you've just got factories.
Yeah.
So you could argue that education's job was to supply a workforce to the people. But then you get to 1948, different act, where the object of education was to get people out of poverty after the war, and the problems there. So I think it's... that's great. I've gone...
Profound.
Sorry.
Pretty profound.
I can see my career, my professor from Birmingham University. Sorry, anyway, that's beside the point. But I think what it is education now, I think, is ever so slightly schizophrenic. And I think it's because they just keep getting stuff layered and
there's
layered
so
and layered and
they
layered
have so
on top
much.
Of them.
To, yeah. I must admit, I had a sort of a vision of school when Kane was at school, and it was kind of not a necessarily positive one because I found it frustrating. But actually, working more and more with schools, I do really feel for them. I think they have a massive challenge.
Absolutely,
yeah. They have lots of restrictions, massive expectations, and they've still got to teach. And
teachers should just teach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's a business now. They are businesses. They're running effectively. But I think
my problem is the top down management of schools by politicians who set targets based on nothing of any use whatsoever.
I think it's even worse than that, and this is why I'm saying schizophrenic. They set a target and then walk away.
Yeah.
They don't do whole top down.
Yeah.
They don't set a target and then set a system and then put a thing in place for
the target.
They just set a target and run away.
Yeah.
And the school's going, what are we doing now?
And then they set another target a couple of months later.
And whoever said that schools had to make money?
Yeah.
Where's that come from?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And this idea that a set of exams can and a mark you get in an exam has any meaning on the rest of your life. It's just nonsense. It's utter nonsense. There isn't anything else in life. If you want to take a metal projectile and drive it at 90 miles an hour down a street, you can have as many goes at that as you like until you get a license to do it. But you can only take your GCSEs once and get your mark, and then they go, "Well, sorry, mate, you can't do anything now. You've only got a D."
I do like some of the ways they're teaching at the moment. So Harrison, as I picked him up, he was telling me what he's doing. He's really excited in his new school and stuff. But what he's doing is in one class he's learning to make, in metalwork, for example, he's making a bowl and chopsticks. And then in food tech, he's got to learn how to create a menu. And then he's got to go and make it. And then he's got... So the whole process
it's integrated.
Is integrated across. Mm. So he'll learn various different skills in different areas, but he can see an overall project and a goal. Yeah.
How old is he?
He's 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's great, isn't
that's
it?
That's a nice way of learning, because it needs to be relevant.
It's the only way of learning, if you really think about it, is by wanting to do something and finding out how to do it. You then add all the skills, and it's a bit like Fran was saying with entrepreneurs and personal skills and selling skills. So many people, especially in this country, don't really actually have selling skills.
Agreed.
But we do, actually. Mm. It's just we don't think we do.
National shopkeepers.
It's a bit like what you said about the maths circle, saying that you were no good at maths. Yeah. But actually, you're one of the people I know that's amazing with figures. Once you come up with so many figures,
it's like a computer.
So you may not have been good at every element of maths, but it's that we label that. If you don't get the grade in your GCSE, but you might have been really good at one element of maths that really helps you in your career.
Funnily enough,
years ago I was a systems programmer, and I can actually multiply binary in my head because I had to do that as part of the job. But I had to do it not because it was binary numbers, but because that's how I wrote a systems program. Yeah, so it became a function of what I was doing.
Yeah, not the be-all and end-all.
And not the be-all and end-all. It's like the amount of people that are plumbers or whatever will measure things and do things and use maths in all the things they do. But if you say to them, "You're any good at maths?" They go, "No, I was crap at maths at school." But they're not.
It means they didn't enjoy it at school. There's a difference.
Yeah,
once you enjoy something, it becomes your...
I think that's what it is. That's what I'm sort of mean by this sort of schizophrenia in that... Yeah. I mean, you do have to, don't get me wrong, I really don't want to be down on schools here. They do, you know, you do have to have doctors and they do have to do biology and they do have to be good. But I think you do have people that, as teachers and so on, you do have people that can do something in a way that makes people understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I remember a maths teacher, I'm not very good at maths, but I have fantastic arithmetic. I have amazing arithmetic, but I'm terrible at maths. And I remember a teacher saying, you know, what's 7 out of 10? And I said, well, that's not a bad result. And he said, well, if you work for NASA, that's 3 dead astronauts.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a different kind of... You've got to look at how does what you're doing impact upon what has to happen.
Well, he sounds like a great teacher.
Actually, he used to work for NASA, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being a teacher. He doesn't work for them anymore, evidently. He's a 7 out of 10.
But this is everything. That relevance is everything. And, you know, and it's just, for so many, it's not relevant. And they can't see an end goal to it either.
Yeah.
There are some people, Howard Gardner, who is professor of education at Harvard, wrote a paper on this in the 1980s, which people still haven't took on board. Eventually, Daniel Goleman, the philosophy, turned it into emotional intelligence. But he was looking at the various intelligences that people have outside of academic intelligence. And he estimated that only 30% of the world population are academically biased. The other 70% have all kinds of other thoughts and feelings and emotional and different types of intelligences. And education does not focus on anything outside of the 30%.
I think you're getting back there to the argument of, I mean, fluid IQ or emotional intelligence, whatever you want to call it. You're getting back to that argument of what is schools producing?
Yeah.
And if the point of school is to produce a workforce, I don't think they're doing that brilliantly.
Absolutely.
And if the point of schools is to produce incredibly rounded human beings, I don't think they're necessarily doing that brilliantly.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it's their fault.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not the fault of teachers and the educational establishment. Yeah. It's not. You're right.
Yeah,
listen, chaps, we could talk about this forever because it's a fascinating subject, but I like what you guys are
have
doing.
Us back on then.
Yeah. Absolutely, we will. We will certainly.
Then we'll sell.
We will certainly have you back on. But for the moment, if people want to find out how to access what you're offering with My Careers Options, how do they do that?
So our website is www.mycareersoptions.co.uk. You can call us on 0333 043 0065, or you can email myself or Chris, which is Daryl, D-A-R-R-E-L.
Or Chris.
Or Chris. C-H-R-I-S at mycareersoptions.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you, chaps.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
We will definitely have you back.
Just one more thing. Sorry, any bunker listeners, I've set up a discount code.
Oh, I do like a discount
code. A bit of bribery always goes down well.
Yeah. B-Bunker50, you get half price.
B-Bunker50, get on there. Come on, parents, get on there. Check it out. Have a look.
Yeah, or if you know any schools.
Yeah.
give them their details.
Yeah, fantastic. Chris, Daryl, thank you so much for that.
No, thank you.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. We're fast approaching the end of the show. We've got a few things that I need to wrap up on and tell
lovely
people.
Lovely to meet you, Fran, as well.
Lovely to meet you guys.
We should talk, actually.
We're coming to our first football match.
So, yeah. I want to tell you about a couple of things. Building business with purpose. Social Enterprise Kent is hosting a key social enterprise conference on the 23rd of November for social entrepreneurs here in Ashford. There's only 50 places available. It's totally free. But if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/SEK conference, you can book your free place on the 23rd of November, and that's at a social enterprise conference here in Kent. Have you got anything you need to read?
The Digital in Kent conference is Thursday the 18th of October, 9 to 3.30 at Quarterhouse in Folkestone. And, Business Diaries, how could I forget? Tunbridge Wells, the Biz Diaries TW on the Twitter. Please book for the 11th of October at the Hotel Divan in Tunbridge Wells. Inspirational, challenging, or perhaps a little sad, definitely worth hearing these Biz Diaries, Tunbridge Wells stories, 11th of October.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Don't forget to tune in to our sister show, the Business Bunker Extra Show, on Friday at 11 o'clock, presented by Amanda Flanders. And this week, her co-host is Gemma Fairclough-Haynes, and their guest is the lovely Lucy Hall. So do tune in for that, 11 o'clock on Friday, the Business Bunker Extra Show. But we've kind of reached the end of another show, and I hope you found it interesting.
I told you it'd be a humdinger.
It was a humdinger.
It was a humdinger. They all need their own show.
Yeah, they all went off on a right rant, didn't they?
Yeah.
Animated.
And we will have them all back, because that was interesting, and there's loads of things we can follow up on
TBC.
And talk about. Absolutely. So I want to say a huge thank you to today's show sponsors, the lovely people at Phoenix Analysts, but mostly to our guests, Fran Borman of Goal 17, Chris Moore, and Daryl Lynham.
And Daryl.
Daryl Lynham Dumont. Yeah. Of My Careers Options. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
For being on the show today, and to my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, the lovely Jill Serkin. We will be back next week with another Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in exactly 7 days' time.
Not too long.
It's not.
I'll be in Slovenia, but I'll tweet you from Slovenia.
I was going to say, but will you be back?
No,
Will you still be in a French vineyard somewhere on your back with a bottle?
Steady.
I will be in Slovenia.
Watch out, Slovenia is all I can say. Hey, we'll be back next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.